beginning here on the top of Yud Amud Aleph by the Mishnah. The Mishnah is continuing the genre of Mishnayot that we've seen throughout the Perek, which is no less than this and no more than that. Over here, we're dealing with the Mikdash. Ein pochatim me'esrim v'achat tkiot v'migdash. There are no less than 21 tkiot that are blown on a given day in the Mikdash. Lo mosifim al arba'im u'shmoneh. And you don't have any more than 48. This is described by the Gemara based on the Mishnah in Sukkah, that on a regular day in the Mikdash, they used to blow 21 times. That is Tekiah, Truah, Tekiah. And those Tekiah, Truah, Tekiah, which count as three kolot, they were divided up in the following manner. There was three, the Ptichat Hashar, to open up the gates in the morning. And then with regards to the Tamid Shel Shachar and the Tamid Shel Ben Arbaim, there were nine kiot, or nine kolot, that were blown by each one of them. They would divide up the shir that was sung by the Levi'im at the time of the Nisuch HaYayin with regards to the Tamid Shel Shachar and Tamid Shel Arbaim into three parts. And in each part, it would begin with a Tkiah Truah Tkiah by the Kohanim. That would be nine kolot. So on a regular day, you have nine by Tamid Shel Shachar, nine by Tamid Shel Ben Arbaim is 18, plus the three to open up the Shar, that's 21. The Gemara then says that V'lo Mosifim Arbaim V'shmoneh, you don't have any more than 48. That's when it turns out that you have Erev Shabbat V'toch HaChag. It's when Friday, Erev Shabbat falls out in the middle of Sukkot, and that's because you have additional tkiot that are associated with Sukkot and Erev Shabbat. With regards to Erev Shabbat, there are an additional six tkiot that are described to us in the Gemara in Shabbat that they used to blow for Lahavdil ben Achol ben Akodesh, three to be Mevatol the Am Mimalacha, and three to cut off and to say that this is the beginning of Shabbat. Those are additional six tkiot associated with every Erev Shabbat, including Erev Shabbat v'toch HaChag. That's six more. That gets you up to 27 tkiot. During the Chag, because of the Nisuch HaMayim, there were an additional 12 tkiot that were blown with regards to the Nisuch HaMayim. There were three for the Shar Elyon, three for the Shar HaTachton, three for the Milui HaMayim, and three for the Nisuch HaMayim. So that gets you an additional 12 on top of a regular day. So then you have now 39 tkiot, and then there were an additional 9 tkiot that were blown with the musafim, because the musafim get an additional blowing aside from that of the Tamid Shel Shachar, Tamid Shel Ben Arbaim. So 39 plus 9 is 48, so that's the maximum amount of tkiot that you can have in the Mikdash. Gemara does note that there are times when there are actually more, and that's on Erev Pesach, Shechaliot B'Shabbat, in a case where Erev Pesach falls out on Shabbat, where you actually have 57 tkiot, because there you have the normal 21 of a given day. You have an additional 27 that come from the Shechitat HaPesach, because we know that it was done in three chaburot. Each chaburah said halal. In the halal, there are 9 tkiot that are blown. They divide halal into three sections, and then they blow 9 times. So 9 times 3 for the three chaburot is 27 kolot, besides the normal 21 that you would have on a given day. That's now 48. And then on top of that, you have the additional 9 kolot that are associated with the Musaf of Shabbat, and that gets you up to 57 tkiot. The truth is that that would have been the biggest number, but Gemara says that we don't use that because it doesn't happen on every given year. It's not something that's going to happen all the time. It only happens when Erev Pesach falls out on Shabbat, which is not so common. And we know that from the Gemara in Psachim, where they didn't know what to do on Erev Pesach that fell out on Shabbat. Whether the Shechitat HaPesach was Dochet HaShabbat or not Dochet HaShabbat, that tells you how infrequently that it happens, not just like in our time where it happens infrequently based on the calendar, but even in their time where they were Mekadesh HaPiriyah, it was also infrequent that it happened. And so it's not something you would mention as the maximum number because it's a rare occurrence. Now the Mishnah moves on to the musical accompaniment that was used in the Mikdash and the number of instruments that was used in those cases. Ein pochatim mishnei nivalim. You don't have less than 2 nivalim. V'lo mosifim al shisha. And you don't have any more than 6. There are 2 questions here. First of all, where does the 2 and the 6 come from? Rashi over here says, V'lo yitparish taima. There's no explanation for why 6 is the maximum number. And the Rabbeinu Gershom says something similar, that V'lo yitparish lan mai taima shisha. We don't know why 6 is the maximum number. With regards to 2, it's also not explained why there are 2. Rashi says, Shnei Nevalim l'shnei Levi'im, which doesn't really give any more clarity, although the Rabbeinu Gershom seems to lean towards the fact that the Psukim that mention these musical instruments in Divrei HaYamim, use the plural term of nivalim. And so since it's nivalim, the minimum of a plural term is two. And so that's how we get to the minimum of two. What the navel is interesting. The Rabbeinu Gershom over here brings two possibilities. He says one possibility is that it is eitz asui kamin nafa, agul, shel eitz. It's like a round circular sifter that is made out of wood. Upareis aleha mikan mikan hakeres shel keves. And then they take the stomach of the sheep and they pull it taut over both sides of it. And then they let it dry out in that way. And they create what otherwise is a form of a drum or some percussion instrument where you have the skin on both sides that you can bang on that makes the sound. So that's one possibility. He then brings later on, V'igadamre, there's some that say that the navel is harpa, balaz, is a harp in laz, which is the more common translation that we see for navel. So that's another possibility as to what the navel is over here. Rashi later on in the Gemara speaks about it as being some sort of wind instrument that you blow into. So you have all different explanations as to what this navel, what this instrument is that the Mishnah is discussing. We'll just use loosely harp because it's the more common translation that's associated with it. With regards to the chalilim, which is the next thing in the Mishnah, it says, "Ein po chatim mishnei chalilim." You have no less than two chalilim, which are flutes. Below mosifim ha-shneimasar. You have no more than 12 of them. Rashi says the reason that you have no more than 12 is Keneged Yud Bet Yamim Shechalil Makad Lifnei HaMizbeach. You see upcoming in the Mishnah that there were 12 times during the year where the flute was used by the Mizbeach, and therefore the maximum number of 12 is associated with the number of times that it's used during the year in the Mikdash. That's the way that Rashi explains it. The Rabbeinu Gershom says Keneged Yud Bet Levim Umdim Al Dukhan. It's because of the 12 Levi'im that stand on the Dukhan. So those 12 are associated with the Chalilim, and that's where you get that maximum number of 12 for the Chalilim. U'b'shneim asar yom b'shana, achalil makeh lifnei ha-mizbeach. And 12 times during the year, the Chalil is hit before the Mizbeach. Rashi explains the usage of the word makeh over here. When you play a flute, you have to push your fingers down on the holes that are in the flute, and that's called makeh. That's the verb that's used to describe the way that you play the instrument, and that's why the word makeh is used over here. That's with regards to the chalil. Rashi also says something that is not muskam lakol, which is that when we're speaking about the chalil over here that they had 12 times a year, that was the uniquely associated with those 12 times a year. From this, it sounds like it was not played in the remainder of the year. The remainder of the year, the chalil was not a part of the musukol accompaniment. It was a special item that was brought out for the shir with regards to the halel. And that's what Rashi describes over here. Upshat hakrava haya shir zeh. Levim shirim bepeh tahalel botan yubat yamim. During those 12 special days, Levim used to sing the halel instead of the regular shir shel yom. Bechalalim mechalalim. And the flutes are playing. Ubishar yamim. In the rest of the year, or the remainder of the year, Hayu Nivalim v'tzitzel v'kinorot v'ashir haya oto shir hamefurash b'rosh Hashanah. So then you have all the other instruments on any other given day of the year, and the shir that they would sing during the time of the Korban was the shir shel yom that you find in the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah. With regards to the Moadim, then you would also have a special shir that was during the Musaf that was associated with that Yom Tov. But it's Rashi, there are two chidushim over here, one of which is that the chalil only played on those 12 days, not any other time. And in addition, his chidush is that at the time that they brought the korban, instead of saying the shir shel yom, they said the halel at that time, and that was what the chalil was associated with, which was the special halel that was said instead of the regular shir of that day. Obviously, there are those that disagree with Rashi with regards to this, as to whether the chalil was uniquely associated with that particular day, or was the chalil used all year round. It's just that it took more prominence on those days, and that's the way the Rambam explains it, that the chalilim are used all the time and were part of the musical accompaniment of the Levim. It just happens to be on these particular days that they were more prominent, or they used to allow them to continue beyond the other instruments in order that the chalilim would be the primary sound that you would hear in those times, which was appropriate for the day or the specialness or uniqueness of the day. Or, according to the Tiferet Yisrael, it was the fact that the flute was done in front of the Mizbeach, and not in the Dukhan, where the other instruments were played for the accompaniment to the Shir of the Vim. So that's with regards to these Shtema Sayom, and now the Mishnah enumerates what are those 12 days. Mishchita at Pesach Rishon, Mishchita at Pesach Sheni, the time that they brought Erev Pesach, the Pesach Rishon, and again on the 14th of Iyar, when they brought the Pesach Sheni, because of the Hallel that was said at that time. Yom Tov Rishon Shel Pesach, the first day of Pesach. Ubi Yom Tov Shel Atzeret, the first day of Shavuot, I mean the only day of Shavuot. Ubi Shmona Yemei Achag, and the 8 days of Sukkot and Shmini Atzeret. So those are the 12 total days. V'lo Haya Makeh Ba'avuv Shel Nechoshet, and they did not use a Avuv would be a hollow instrument or a hollow item. So they did not use a hollow item made out of copper. Ela ba'abuv shel kaneh, but rather a hollow piping, which was made out of a reed. Ipnoish shekolo arev, because that gives the most beautiful or melodic type of sound that you would look for, rather than, I guess, a trumpeting type sound that would come from something that is nechoshet. Velo haya mechalek ela ba'abuv yechidei, mishnei shehu machlik yafeh. And they did not, according to Rashi, machlik means to finish off. They did not finish off Ela be'abuv yechidi, with a single hollow flute. Ibnei shu machlik yafeh, because it creates a great ending to the music or to the instruments that are playing. The Gemara is going to say later on that the abuv and the chalil are synonymous. And so then Rashi l'shitato, who says that the situation here is that they're only playing the chalilim in these unique cases. Therefore he says over here, when it means that they are machlik, means that they are finishing off the sound, even though they have 12 flutes that are playing, one of them does the finality, or one of them extends longer than the others, in order that it ends off on a sweet or nice note. That's the way that Rashi explains it. That's Rashi, the Shitato. And according to the Rabbeinu Gershom, who brings what we know as the dissenting opinion above, that the Chalilim were played not just alone, but together with the other instruments, then he says that the chalilim extended their sound beyond the other instruments. It's not the particular chalil, but rather that the chalilim as a unit play on, or they are kolo arev, as they continue on beyond the other instruments in order to end off on a melodic, sweet note of the flutes. The Rambam in the Perush Mishnayot has a slightly unique explanation over here, that abuv yechidi means a flute with a single hole in it. This was a more unique type of flute or instrument, as opposed to the chalilim that we mentioned up above, and that was the instrument used in the finale. Ba'avdei Kohanim Hayu, those that are playing the instruments, it sounds like, according to Rashi, although Rashi says it's particular to the chalilim, you could say this about all of the instruments that were played there, that those that were playing them were actually Avdei Kananiim of the Kohanim. Divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says that there's no need or particular need for it to be Kohanim Levim or even Yisraelim that are playing the instruments. Even Avdei Kohanim can be those that play the instruments. Yossi Omer, Mishpachat Beit Pagrim or Pagris, Ubeit Tzifra, or the way that Rashi has it, Tzafraya. These are all names of families. Me Amum or Amos, depending again on the Girsa. Ayu Masim Nekuna. These families that were Yisraelim Miyuchasim, they were the ones who played the instruments and did the musical accompaniment in the Mikdash. And because they were Miyuchasim, they married the Kohanim, or the families into the families of the Kohanim. Mechirinera v'entikonos omer Levim hayu, that they were actually Levim, just like the shir was done with the Levim, so too the musical instruments were played by the Levim. So here's a broad description of what's happening in the Mikdash with regards to the different instruments, those that are playing the instruments, and that which takes place when they do play the instruments. And it could be that the Mishnah is not describing, like we saw above, anything in particular with regards to the numbers of maximum or minimum numbers of instruments that are played, except that that was what would be nice musically. And so that it was not a determination based on Remez or all the hints that we saw from Rashi and the Rabbeinu Gershom, but simply, this was the best orchestra that they would put together that would accompany the Shir of the Vivim, and that would explain then what are the numbers of instruments that we're speaking about, as well as the different instruments that are used at different times, and which instrument that you end off with. Now the Gemara says, Matnitan delok Rabbi Yehuda. Our Mishnah is clearly not like Rabbi Yehuda. The Tanya Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Apuchet lo yifchot misheva, but Mosif lo yusif al shesh yisrei. Says the minimum number of tkiot in the Mikdash are 7, and the maximum number is 16. If you just look at it carefully, you can see that it's the same number as we're using the Mishnah, just divided by 3. He thinks that 7 is the minimum number instead of 21, and the maximum number is 16 instead of 48, which is a multiplier of 3 in our Mishnah versus what Rabbi Yehuda says. But my kamiflike, what's the difference between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim, or our Mishnah? Rabbi Yehuda savar tkiya shua tkiya chadahi. He thinks that those 3 different kolot are a single kol. They're considered to be a single unit, whereas the Chachamim believe that they're considered to be 3 different sounds or 3 different units. Rabbanan savar tkiya lachud, utshua lachud, utkiya lachud. Even though you have a unit called the tkiya shua tkiya, each kol is considered independently, and that's why you get a differential of 3 times between the Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda. He thinks that every unit of Tkiyah Shua Tkiyah is 1, the Chachamim count is 3. Therefore, his 7 is equivalent to 21 of the Chachamim, and his 16 is equivalent to 48. My time of the Rabbi Yehuda. What's the reasoning behind Rabbi Yehuda's position? Tiv utkatem trua. It says that you will blow a Tkiyah, and it calls it a trua. Uchtiv trua itka'u. And also says that the trua you will blow as a Tkiyah. Shmamina. That the Torah uses the verb and the description of the sound in both situations to tell you that they're all basically one unit or classified as one item. The fact that it says utkatem trua, so even though you're blowing a trua, it uses the verb of utkatem to teach you that the trua and the tkia are basically the same unit, or that the Torah calls it tkia trua or trua atkia. Or the fact that the pasuk mentions them in a sequence of tkiya, chua, tkiya, all in one pasuk, is an indication that they have to be one continuous sound or one unit, not separate units over here. So therefore, shmamina tkiya chua utkiya chalhi. Rabbanon, how the pshuta lefana upshuta lachara? They use those pasukim to teach you that that's the unit that you come up with. It says utkatem chua. It teaches you that you have a tkiya before the chua, and if they've chua, itko. And it also says that with regards to the trua, you have a itkau, a tkiya that comes afterwards. So their limud is from there that you have tkiya before, tkiya afterwards. And that's what gives you the setup of tkiya, trua, and tkiya. As Rabbi Yehuda is learning from this, that they are really conflated terms, tkiya and trua. And that's why they become as if they are one, a single unit. Now, Rabbi Yehuda in the Gemara in Sukkah and Rosh Hashanah learns the fact that you have tkiya lefana and achara from the psukim that say utkatem trua shenit. So the shenit tells you that tkiya shniyala, that is afterwards or second to it. And that's where he learns out this structure of tkiya trua tkiya. And that's why he doesn't use these psukim like the chachamim do to learn about pshuta lefanah upshuta leachara. Rabbanon my time, oh. So what's the reasoning behind the Rabbanon's position that tkiya and trua are considered or classified as 2 different kolot? Dichtibu, hayil atakao titku velotariu. Makes it very clear in the Psukim in Balotcha with regards to the Chatzotzrot that when you gather the people together, you do a tkiya and not a trua. That shows you that a tkiya is distinct from a trua. Bisakadatka tkiya trua tkiya chadohi. You think they're all the same thing. It's all one unit. Amar Rachmana avid palgo de mitzvah. Then why would the Torah tell you to do a tkiya without a trua? If they're all a single piece, then what is the Torah saying? Blow a tkiya and not a trua. That's as if you're saying blow a half a unit. And that doesn't make any sense. Rabbi Yehuda, simana ba'almahu. That Rabbi Yehuda says, that's not a question, because over there, there's no mitzvah. Blowing the tkiya and not the trua is not because there's a mitzvah to blow the shofar or the chatzotzrot. Rather, it's a mechanism for gathering the people together. Just a way to gather the people. So there, it's not considered to be half a mitzvah, because there's no mitzvah at all. And that is just a unique circumstance in which it's used for mikra ha'idah, but not because there's anything to do with the normal unit of tkiya, trua, tkiya. Kaman azla had the amar Rav Kahana. Who does this follow, this statement of Rav Kahana? Ein ben tkiya the trua velo klum. There is no spacing or gapping between a tkiya and a trua. Kaman ki Rabbi Yehuda. That's like Rabbi Yehuda who says that they're all one unit. pshita, that's pretty straightforward, that's the view of Rabbi Yehuda. Maybe it's even like the view of the Rabbanan. Lafuke mid Rabbi Yochanan. They're coming to dismiss the position of Rabbi Yochanan. Damar, shema tesha tkiot b'tesha sha'ot b'yom. On Rosh Hashanah, if he hears the 9 kolot that you're chayav to hear on Rosh Hashanah, tkiyat shuat tkiyah, you have to hear that series 3 times on Rosh Hashanah. And Rabbi Yochanan says, even if you don't hear them in sequence together, but you hear them spread out over the day, 1 kol in each hour, over 9 hours, then you are yetzah. You are yotze. So you would have thought here, maybe the chachamim are coming along to say that that's not correct, and that's why they say lo klum, that you can't leave any spacing between them. It says, kamash malon, that that's not what we say, that they don't disagree with Rabbi Yochanan. It says, v'yim ha'chanami, why don't we say that is exactly what it's doing over here? It's the view of the chachamim against Rabbi Yochanan. Im kema mai lo klum. For them, v'lo klum is not the right term. Lo klum means that there's absolutely no spacing or hefsek between the kolot, which is what you'd think that Rabbi Yehuda would need. But for the chachamim, even if they were arguing on Rabbi Yochanan, they're trying to dismiss the fact that he has it spread over the day, over 9 hours, but not trying to say that it has to be right up against each other without anything between them. They're just simply saying it can't be spread out like he says it's spread out. And the word v'lo klum would be not the right terminology to use, and that's why we're assigning it to Rabbi Yehuda's position and not to the position of the Chachamim. Very interesting Tosafot over here. He makes 2 assumptions. The Gemara is saying here that Tkiah, Shuat Tkiah, according to Rabbi Yehuda, is basically 1 long tkiah. It's 1 sounding of the shofar. And v'hachanami the Rabbanon, the asur lafsik hatkiyot. And for the Rabbanon also, there's a problem of doing a hefsek between tkiyot. Umikan ira the Rebbe, the asur lafsik ben shvarim. The girsa here is ben shvarim, the tkiyot, but down below he has the girsa ben shvarim, the truah. That if we're using shvarim truah to be one of the possibilities of what a truah is, then you can't be mafsik between them. Meaning that when you want to make something into a single kol, then you can't have any separation between them. Now whether that means you can't have even a breath between them, they have to be done by neshima achat, that's 1 possibility. Or the other possibility is you just can't have any space, you can't have any gapping between them. And you can see that in the Shit Megubetzadot, where he brings from the Rosh, there are some people who aren't careful about this, to make the kolot into a single kol. The Efshar Demifarej Velo Klum, and they understand the word Velo Klum, Shelo Yafsik Bishihya, that you can't have a hefsek of delay or tearing between the kolot, Avali Masan Bishteni Shimot, Lo Nikre Demifsike. But if you do them in 2 breaths, that's not called a hefsek, and therefore he believes that, yes, you can't separate the sounds, but that doesn't mean they have to be done in a single breath. Even if they're done in 2 breaths, that is fine in terms of being Velo Klum, the requirement that a shvarim truah be a single kol. And therefore, when you blow the shvarim at truah as the possibility of being a truah, you gotta blow them as a single unit. And that's what the Balei HaTosafot are saying, even according to the Rabbonon in that case, that's what you're gonna have to do. Ulekach anu osim shvarim u'truah b'hadei adodi. That's why we do shvarim and truah together. B'chad kiyah misafek. As 1 blowing, basur lafsik b'nehem. And you can't have any gapping between them, meaning that it's a possibility that you'd have to do that on 1 breath, is what it means, ain't a mafsik. Or the other possibility is that you just can't have any sound or break between them. You just have to blow them sequentially, 1 after the other. It says, v'im ne'anas v'truah, lo yachol lasot minei kotzer rucho, u'minei shum ones, yachzir l'shvarim. If something goes wrong during that shvarim truah, you can't just go back and blow the truah. You have to go back and blow the entire shvarim truah because it's a single unit. It's not 2 separate kolot. And then he says, mikan mashma, the sulaf sik bent ki'ah. Lit ki'ah is what we have in our girsa, but the girsa below is changed to bent ki'ah lit truah. Then you can't have a hefsek between ki'ah lit truah. And that is hard to understand how he extrapolates that from this situation. Even though we say truah ki'ah belong together as a unit, we don't look at them as tightly bound as the shvarim truah in the middle of the blowing. But nevertheless, he says that based on that, you can't be mafsik between the tkiah and the truah, even though maybe you could have some sort of breath that you would take in between them, which would seem to be obvious that you need to do that in order to blow the tkiah, truah, tkiah. But you still can't be mafsik between them because there has to be juxtaposed the tkiah to the truah and then the truah to the tkiah. Although the more likely explanation, and that's the way Tosafot says it in other places, is that for the Rabbonon, inside of a single tkiah, you can't have a hefsek similar to what is said here by Rabbi Yehuda between a tkiah and a shuah. That's something interesting. That's not the main topic of our sugya over here, but an important corollary that Rabbi Yehuda teaches us, that when you want to make multiple kolot into a single kol, you can't have a lo klum. You can't have any gapping, any spacing between them. And again, that could mean that maybe it has to be done all in one breath, or it means that you can't have any interruption or any stopping in between them. And now the Gemara continues over here and says, "12 yom b'shana makeh b'chalil." There are 12 days during the year where they play the flute. According to Rashi, it means uniquely that they play the flute. According to the Rabbeinu Gershom and others, it means that the flute is the primary instrument that is associated with that day, in addition to the other instruments that are played. So now we have Maishna Hani. What is unique about those days? Ho b'yachid gomer behem et ha'halel. Because on those days, an individual finishes the halel. So now, these words are loaded. First of all, why is it yachid and not the tzibur? Makes it sound like there's something unique here about even individuals are saying this halel. The second thing is gomer, that you finish the halel. So this leads to the famous machloke between the Ashkenazim and the Svaradim with regards to, first of all, what's the bracha on halel? And second of all, as to whether the gemira over here means to finish the halel, to say whole halel, whether gemirat halel over here simply means amirat halel. And the view of the Svaradim is that the gemirat halel is the verb that's being used here, and it means to complete the entirety of the halel. And so therefore they make the bracha when they do say full halel, like on these 12 days, they would say the gemara et ha-halel, as opposed to the Ashkenazim would say that likro et ha-halel, because Rabbeinu Tam says the word gomer over here does not mean to finish the halel, but rather to read the halel, likro et ha-halel, like it's used many other places in Shas. That is because the implications of saying the gemara et ha-halel say that there are other times where you don't finish the halel. And that would then imply that there is some sort of takanat chachamim, or institution of the chachamim, in which certain days you finish the halel, and other days you don't finish the halel. And the Rabbeinu Tam says that's incorrect, because the days that we don't say a full halel, where we say chatzi halel, like Rosh Chodesh, like the remaining 6 days of Pesach, are a minhag, and not any takanat chachamim. And therefore, gomeret halel can't mean to finish it, as opposed to when you don't finish it, because don't finishing it has nothing to do with the Takanat Chachamim. It is simply a minhag of the Am to do that. That's the first important factor that comes out of this. The second important factor comes out of this is, do you make a bracha on Chatzi Halel? That according to this Svaradim, where it says the Gomeret Halel, Gomeret Halel, only when you're Gomeret Halel do you say the bracha, because that's the Takanat Chachamim. The practice to say Chatzi Halel, which is a minhag, you don't make a bracha on it because you can't say ligmor et halel, and so therefore there's no bracha on such a halel. On the other hand, here the Balei Tosafot will bring the shita of the Rabbeinu Tam, who says that you do make a bracha on chatzi halel, and he brings evidence to that fact. First of all, by not saying that the gomer et halel here means to finish the halel, but rather to say the halel, and therefore you could say likro et halel both on a full halel and on a chatzi halel. In addition, he proves it from certain stories that were told in the Gemara. For instance, the Gemara in Pesachim that says when Rav came to Bavel, he came into the shul and he saw them saying Hallel, and he couldn't understand why they were saying Hallel on Rosh Chodesh until he saw them or realized that they were skipping parts of the Hallel, and then he realized that it was a minhag ba'alma and it wasn't the full Hallel. But Tosafot says, wait a minute, if he didn't make a bracha, if they didn't make a bracha when they started the Hallel, then Rav would have known that from the beginning, that it was all a minhag, and it wasn't the real halal. So he says from there, it's pretty clear that they made a bracha, and that's why Rav didn't know, until they started skipping in the halal, that it was a minhag and not the recitation of the regular halal. Tosafot in Pesachim gives an alternate answer, which is that Rav came in late, that he showed up late, and he came after they would have made the bracha, and therefore the bracha wasn't indicative to him, and maybe there was no bracha that was made, but he just wasn't there when that would have taken place to give him away that information. Revere Tosafot brings for the Rabbeinu Tam, this is a proof, the fact that they definitely said a bracha, even on a chatzi halel, because otherwise, that information would have been given away to Rav in the beginning, from the fact that they didn't make a bracha. In addition, he brings a proof from the Gemara in Brachot, that says that there are 18 days upon which the Yachid is Gomer Behemet Alel. And over there it says that during those time periods between the different paragraphs, you're allowed to stop. Be'emsa perek eino posek. In the middle of the parak, you cannot make an interruption. You can't stop. Yamim she'en yachid gomer behemet halel, days that the yachid does not finish the halel, implying that those mean days that they say chatziah halel, then afil be'emsa perek posek. You can even interrupt in the middle of a parak. Now, hafsakar, hefsek, applies when you're speaking about a bracha. Then you could talk about a hefsek. But you're just saying perikim of tehillim, and you're not making a bracha on it. Why would you speaking about a hefsek in that situation? You could argue, and what the Poskei Sfarad will argue, is that the unit of Hallel is only relevant when you put them together. If you start being mafsik between them or interrupting them, then it has a effect of breaking them up or changing the status of the unit that you're saying. So maybe it could be relevant, hefsek. And the Rabbeinu Tam's biggest issue is the Gemara in Sukkah that says with regards to the practice, the minhag to take the arava around the Mizbeach, but over there, we say that it was a minhag, nivi'im, and therefore we don't make a bracha on it. So it sounds from there that a minhag doesn't get a bracha. He says, hani mile tiltul de minhag kumo arava. That's only when there's a small or slight action that you're taking because of a minhag, there you don't make a bracha. Avala kriya de minhag, the minhag involves a kriya, like kriyat halal, there mivachim shapir, then you can't make a bracha. So even though that Gemara is the strongest proof to the view of the Sfaradim and undermines the Rabbeinu Tam. Nevertheless, the Rabbeinu Tam creates a chiluk between cases where you're speaking about small actions or tiltul, where a minhag would not have a bracha, versus situations like this where there's a full kriya of chatzi halel, where you would make a bracha. So that's the second thing that comes out of this Gomer et Halel. From there, you learn that even a yachid should make a bracha in the beginning, because it's not considered to be a bracha the batala. Just like women make a bracha on etilat lulav and mitzvah tasei shazman grama, even though they are pturot. And similarly over here, just like we are pturot mihalel, and nevertheless we're saying it miminhag, you can opt into it and you can say the bracha. The third thing you have to speak about is yachid. The other poskim speak about the yachid being significant versus the tzibur, because there is a view brought in the Ramah in Shulchan Aruch with regards to chatzi halel. You should only make a bracha on it when it's done with tzibur. When the minhag is done in the context of tzibur, that's where you make a bracha, but a yachid should make a bracha. So that's what the word yachid means over here. Yachid gomer bahem et halel means this is the time period when a yachid will finish the whole halel and make a bracha, as opposed to the case of minhag of chatzi halel, where only the tzibur would have made a bracha, not the yachid. That the Ramah brings the alternate opinion that even a yachid on chatzi halel can make a bracha. He does say it's better, or we do say that halacha, it's better to do it with a tzibur when you're making such a bracha, but even when you're alone, you do make a bracha, and that's what we just saw from the Rabbeinu Hananel, that the yachid may not necessarily have to make a bracha, but if he chooses to make a bracha, he can, as opposed to the tzibur, who must make a bracha according to that view of the Rabbeinu Tam. And the Baha'i adds in an additional factor that a yachid says halal on these days, but the implications are that the tzibur would say halal in more instances than that, and that is when the tzibur as a klal, times where all of klal are together, like the shechitat haPesach, which will precipitate the necessity to say halal, not because the yachid is doing it, because the tzibur as a whole is doing something together, whether that's togetherness in performance of a mitzvah, or togetherness in gaining salvation from an enemy, that would also be another facilitating event for saying of halal, and that is as opposed to the yachid over here, where that's not true. These are the days that the Yachid says hello, and there are no additional days, as opposed to the Tzibur that does have additional days. And that's part of the Machloket that revolves around whether one could say hello on Yom HaTzma'ut, because whether it's classified as being a Tzara Shinigala Mimeno, where it involves Kol Yisrael, and that would be the facilitating factor that would allow you to say hello, and is that the situation with regards to Yom HaTzma'ut. And that is actually one of the reasons that Rabbi Yosef brings not to make a bracha on Hallel on Yom HaTzmaut is because the Takana only involved the nation Aseh L'chol Yisrael, and this may not be classified as such a situation. So now, back to our Gemara. Damar Rabbi Yochanan Mishnah Rabbi Shimon Yotzadak, Shmona Asar Yamim Sheyachid Gomer Behem Et Hallel. There are 18 days during the year in which a Yachid finishes off the Hallel. This is distinct from the numeration that was in our Mishnah, which was the 12 that were mentioned in our Mishnah. Why does our list over here have 18 and the Mishnah have 12? It seems to be that the list in the Mishnah is associated with the Mikdash, and therefore it includes in that list Erev Pesach, Pesach Rishon, and Pesach Sheni, which are not going to be in the list that we're going to bring right now. And in addition to that, our Mishnah is missing Chanukah, which is something that was not necessarily associated with the Mikdash, because it's not connected to a Korban in particular. It did happen while the Mikdash was still extant, and still existed when the Mikdash was extant, but it's not connected to the Korbanot. The list in our Mishnah is that list that's connected to the Mikdash, or the Korbanot, the Mikdash. The list that we're speaking about over here is a list, a comprehensive list of the 18 days during the year where you're going to finish off the Hallel, and it doesn't have, as Rashi notes over here, Pesach Rishon and Pesach Sheni, because those are associated with the Mikdash, or a particular mitzvah, and that's why not only is Pesach Rishon, Pesach Sheni absent, but also the Hallel of Leila Seder is absent from this list. And over here we're speaking about the Yachid Gober Ben Hallel. These are where individuals are going to say the full Hallel, and not necessarily something associated with a particular avoda in the Mikdash, like the Korban HaPesach. And this list seems to be capturing days upon which we say Hallel, not particular events or mitzvot or connections to the Mikdash. Now the Gemara enumerates what are those 18 days that the Hallel said, a full Hallel said. Shmoni Yemei HaChag, the full 8 days of Sukkot, including Shmini Atzeret. Ushmoni Yemei Chanukah, the 8 days of Chanukah. V'yom Tov HaRishon Shel Pesach, the first day of Pesach. V'yom Tov Shel Atzeret. And then they, here it says Rishon, but obviously, like we said before, there's no second day of Shavuot. It's only the day of Shavuot that gives you 18. Ubigola, outside of Eretz Yisrael, Esrim Ve'achat, there are 21 days. That gets you the Yom Tov Sheni Shel Galiot. Tisha Yimei Achag, the 9 days of Sukkot. And on Sukkot, it's the 9th day, because obviously if you're saying for the full 8 days anyway, even on Chol HaMoed, we say a full Hallel, then Yom Tov Sheni doesn't add an additional day except for at Shmini Atzeret, where Simchat Torah on the 9th day adds in an additional day of saying Hallel Shalem. Shmoni Yimei Chanukah, the 8 of Chanukah, Shnei Yamim Tovim Shel Pesach, the first 2 days of Pesach, Shnei Yamim Tovim Shel Atzeret, and the 2 days of Shavuot. Now the Gemara wants to understand what is unique about these days that you're saying Hallel. For instance, Pesach, why are you only saying it on the first day and not the remainder of the days? And that's what Gemara says, Maishna B'chag, Tamrina Kol Yoma, why on Sukkot you say it every day of full Hallel? Why is Pesach different? Why we only say it on the first day and we don't say it on the remaining days? The answer to the Gemara is, Kol Yoma D'chag Chalukim B'Karbonoteim. Each day of the Sukkot, the Korban changes. So it's not that you have the first day where it's a unique Korban and then the remaining days are just the same Korban that was brought on the first day, which is the way that we lean on Pesach, Kai Le Taseh LeYom, Shivat HaYamim. The same way you do it on the first day is the same Korban you bring for all the days of Pesach. Whereas by Sukkot, each day has a different Korban. The Parim change. Every day the number of Parim that you bring change. Pesach, Ein Chalukim Bekarbonoteim. So Sukkot has this distinction in the Korbanot that gives you the impetus to say Hallel on that day, whereas Pesach does not have that differentiation. So it seems to be that the aspect of Korban and unique Korban is one of the triggers for the Hallel. It may be that it's indicative of the fact that there's an additional Simcha that's associated with that day, or that the subsequent days are unique, each one, and not subsumed under the first day. And so because of that, that chidush that is in each day, or that additional simcha that's associated with those days, is what generates the Korban. Now, the Mara does not bring this reason, but the Midrashei Halakha in other places do bring an additional reason as to why we don't do that, and that is because of Binfolo Ivecha Al Tismach. That is what, when your enemies are being destroyed or falling, don't celebrate. And that is the reason that's brought as to why we don't say Hallel on the remainder of Pesach. You actually have 2 reasons that are brought, one of which is this reason over here about Chalukim B'Korbanoteim, and the other reason which is brought about that the Mitzrim are Tavu B'Yam B'Pesach, and therefore we don't say Hallel. So the truth is that that reason is probably only a good reason for why we don't say it on the 7th day of Pesach, and that might be the explanation over here. The explanation we're giving is really for why you don't say it on Chol HaMoed or the remainder of Pesach. But the seventh day of Pesach, which is a Yom Tov, should have then created a necessity to say Halel Shalem, irrespective of the Korbanot or the uniqueness of the Korbanot. That is dismissed because of the problem of B'Foloi Vecha Tismach, and therefore it would be inappropriate for us to be singing Shira while the Mitzrim are Tovim Bayam. So it might be that the combination of those two reasons are telling us why on the remaining days of Pesach we don't say it. One of them to teach us why on Chol HaMoed we don't say it, and even maybe the seventh day, but then the seventh day as a Yom Tov has a unique aspect that should have been Mechayev Halel. That's taken away by the issue of B'Foloi Vecha Al Tismach. Now the Gemara says, Shabbat, Techalukah, Bikarbonotea, Lema. Why don't we say Halel on Shabbat? Because it also has its own unique Korban that's brought, the Musvei Shabbat. It says, Lo Ikre Moed. Shabbat is not called a Moed. And that's not exactly true, because in Ermor, when it speaks about the Moedim, Shabbat is the first of the Moedim that's mentioned there. But the Kriyata Moed, or the Mikre Kodesh aspect of the Moed, is not necessarily associated with Shabbat, which is that the Kriyat Moed is what establishes the day to have Kedusha, which means that it needs Kedusha Chodesh, or needs Kedusha Yedei B'nai Yisrael to generate that Kedusha. That's uniquely associated with the Yamim Tovim, and not with Shabbat, and that's what the word Moed means over here. It's something that happens at an appointed time, something that happens in an infrequent basis. It's not something that happens on a weekly or a natural cycle, and that's why Shabbat is left out, or that's why you wouldn't say Halel on Shabbat. Again, if Halel is about a unique time and a simcha, then if you do it every week, it would lose that flavor to it. And that's why it's not called a Moed Shabbat, and therefore it's not appropriate to say Halel. Rosh Chodesh, Dikrei Moed Lema. What about Rosh Chodesh, which is known as a Moed? Let's assume now that part of that means that it's Kavua Ayidei B'nei Yisrael, just like the Yamim Tovim. The Kriyat HaChodesh is what establishes the Yamim Tovim, so it too establishes Rosh Chodesh. That's number one. Number two is that it is less frequent. It might be a cycle or a natural cycle, but it's less frequent than something like Shabbat. And the last of which is that Rashi quotes the Gemara in Tanit that quotes the Pasuk in Eicha that says, Karalai Moed Lishbor Bachurai. Again, the simple reading of the Pasuk has nothing to do with Moedim. Has nothing to do with a Moed in the sense that we think of it. It just means, Karalai Moed Lishbor Bachurai. It was an appointed time to kill all of my youngsters, or in essence, it made it like it was a special time for exactly that, the killing of the youngsters. Chazal interpret that Karei Moed in two ways, one of which is that Tisha B'Av itself is known as a Moed, and therefore we don't say Tachanun on Tisha B'Av, and also the idea that Latid Lavo, Tisha B'Av will turn into a Moed. In addition, the Gemara in Tanit says Karei Moed was because in order for the Meraglim to come back and fall out on Tisha B'Av, it says that B'Shanazu Maluha, they made Tammuz into a Malay, they added an additional day to the month, and that's what causes the Meraglim to return on Tisha B'Av, it makes Tisha B'Av into the day that it was. The Karalai Moed, the Gemara uses to teach us that they added in an additional day of Rosh Chodesh, and then for Rosh Chodesh is associated with the word Moed. For that reason, the Gemara over here says, why don't we say Halel on Rosh Chodesh? When we say Halel means a Halel Shalem, we say Chatzi Halel, which again is a minog, not the real Halel that you would say. It says, Lo Iktish Vasiat Melacha. There's another requirement, is that you need it to be sanctified with an Isser Melacha. So Shabbat has Isser Melacha, doesn't have Moed. Rosh Chodesh has Moed, but it doesn't have Isser Melacha. And for that reason, both of them don't have Halel. And how do I know that there is such an association? Dichtiv, because it says in the Pasuk in Yishayahu, with regards to the defeat of Sancheriv, Asher Yelachem Kaleel Hitkadesh Chag, that the Shir, the song that you will say, will be for you like the night that is sanctified as a Chag. Laila Mikudash the Chag Tun Shira. A night that is sanctified to be a Chag, which would then include any Isser Melacha, then Taun Shira. It requires Shira. Sheina Mikudash the Chag, something that's not sanctified to be a Chag, like Rosh Chodesh, Ain't Taun Shira, does not have a requirement of Shira. This is also the source for the practice to say Halel on the night of Pesach, because it says here, Kilel Hitkadesh Chag, like the night that is sanctified as a Chag, which means that the singing of the Shira in the time of Sancheriv was similar to a Shira that we say at night time for a Chag, and that is on the night of Pesach, which was Yitziat Mitzrayim. That's the practice both to say the Halel in the Haggadah on the night of Pesach, as well as the Minhag to say the Hallel in Shul on the night of Pesach, and that comes from this Pasuk over here. Rosh Hashanah v'Yom HaKippurim d'ikru moed v'ikdush v'asiyat melacha. Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, which have both qualifications, they're called a moed, they're part of the Parshiyat HaMoedim, and in addition to that, they have an Isur melacha associated with them, lema. We should say a Hallel Shalem over there. Mishom de Rabbi Abou. We don't say it because of Rabbi Abou's statement. Am Rabbi Abou. Amru malachei asheret lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The ministering angels say before God, Ribono Shel Olam, ipnei ma en Yisrael omim shira lefanecha b'Rosh Hashanah v'Yom HaKippurim. Why aren't they singing shira? It's a moed. It's Isur Malacha. Why aren't they singing Hallel? Amru lahem, efshar melech yoshev al kisei adin, v'sifrei chayim v'sifrei meitim, duchim lefanav. How could it be that the great king is sitting on his throne of judgment, and the books of life and books of death are open in front of him? Yisrael omrim, shira lefanai? And then Yisrael would say shira in that context, meaning it's inappropriate to sing Hallel on a day where there's so much at stake, meaning that the person's life is in the balance. You don't sing Hallel in such a situation. That is the ambiguity of both Rosh Hashanah, less so on Yom Kippur, but more so on Rosh Hashanah, as to whether it really is a holiday, a celebratory holiday. That was why there was a practice amongst many of the Gaonim to fast on Rosh Hashanah, not to eat on Rosh Hashanah. But for we who do eat on Rosh Hashanah, we have a mix of sensations and feelings on the day of Rosh Hashanah. Both have the aspects of din and the seriousness of the day that's associated with din. On the other hand, it is a moed, and therefore we're eating and celebrating as well. And so that's a mix. The way that the Rambam formulates it is that these are days of simcha, but not simcha yitera. These are days of happiness, but not overwhelming joy and happiness, because in the background sits this idea of sifrei chayim u'metim petuchim lefanav, and that mitigates some of the simcha, and that's why we don't say Hallel on those days. Also points out over here that the Malachi Asheret, they're asking Hashem about why Bnei Yisrael don't sing Shira, which implies that they do sing Shira. And based on that, he says that in the liturgy of Rosh Hashanah and Yom HaKippurim, you should leave in that which says, V'chayot yishoru u'kruvim yifaru, because they do sing Shira, even though we don't sing Shira, the Malachim do sing Shira, and therefore it's appropriate to have that in the liturgy of Rosh Hashanah and Yom HaKippurim. V'chanukah, you mentioned as one of the units of days that we say Hallel Shalem are the 8 days of Chanukah. They're not a moed. They don't have a korban, and they don't have an Isur Malacha. The lo hachi. They don't have any of the qualifications. V'kamar, and we'd still say it. My answer is mishum nisa, because of a miracle. So this teaches us that there's now a separate category, nothing to do with moed, Isur Malacha, and korban, which is nes. When there's a miracle that takes place, part of the response to the nes, like we saw in the pasuk in Yishayel with regards to the salvation. When Sancheriv's army is wiped out by Hashem, when they are laying siege to Yerushalayim, there's a requirement for Shira, there's a requirement for a response in song to thank Hashem for the miracle that was done. Purim de'ika nisa lema. So if that's the case, why don't we also say Hallel on Purim? There's a miracle on Purim as well, the salvation of Bnei Israel. Why don't we say Hallel? Amar Rabbi Yitzchak lefi she'en omrim Shira anes shebechutz la'aretz. It's one of the number of reasons that's given in the Gemara in Megillah. Gemara here will come back and give the other reasons later on. But here he says the first reason is that we don't say Hallel on a nes that takes place outside of Eretz Yisrael. Matkifla Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak v'ari Yitziat Mitzrayim. What about the fact that we say Hallel on Yitziat Mitzrayim, the nes shebechutz la'aretz hu? Because that is a miracle that took place in chutz la'aretz, v'amin and Hallel, and yet we still say Hallel. So now, obviously the question here can't be about the day of Pesach, because the day of Pesach, the reason you're saying Hallel is because of Korban, Moed, and Isur Malacha. It has nothing to do with the Nes of Yitziat Mitzrayim. So it would seem obvious that the reference over here is to the saying of Hallel on the night of Pesach. And that is, why do we say Hallel on the night of Pesach if that's a Nes that happened in Chutz La'aretz? So the answer to that question is, Kedetanya, Ajlo Nichnesu Yisrael La'aretz, Hukshiru Kol Aretzot Lomar Shira. Before Bnei Yisrael enter into Eretz Yisrael, then anywhere there were miracles that were performed, then they could have Shira or Hallel said over those miracles. Once you entered into Eretz Yisrael becomes the only place where miracles have significance that you would say Hallel over them. There are those that want to formulate that because the necessity for Hallel to come about has to be a miracle of a salvation of Kol Klal Yisrael, or something that impacts on all of Klal Yisrael, and only inside of Eretz Yisrael is Bnei Yisrael a tzibur, or Klal Yisrael is a unit that is a tzibur that can generate that chiyuv of Hallel, whereas outside of Eretz Yisrael, Jews are yechidim, they're not considered to be a tzibur, and therefore you can't generate the chiyuv of Hallel outside of Eretz Yisrael. Now here we have the other answers that are given in the Gemara and Megillah as to why we don't say Hallel on Purim. The second answer is given by Rav Nachman Amar, Kriyata, Zohe Leila, that the reading of the Megillah is the Hallel of Purim, and therefore we don't say Hallel because we have the Persume Nisa and the Todat Hashem through the Kriyata Megillah. There is a famous Meiri in the Gemara and Megillah that says that if you don't read the Megillah, for whatever reason you don't have a Megillah on Purim, that you would say Hallel instead of reading the Megillah on Purim, and sent this Meiri many years ago to a friend of mine, and he was giving shir somewhere else, and there was a Holocaust survivor in the shir that he was giving, and the individual said to him that they got a psak halacha when they were in the ghetto, and they didn't have a Megillah to say Hallel on Purim, because it kriyata zuhei leila. Based on that, when you don't have the kriyata Megillah, you say Hallel. Rav Hutner in the Pachad Yitzhak objects to that view of the Meiri, and he says that it's just not right. What the Meiri is equating over here and saying that Kriyata Zuha Leila makes an equivalence to say that either you say Hallel or Kriyata Megillah, he says is incorrect. And that is because Purim is a different type of miracle than, for instance, Chanukah. Chanukah is a Nes Galui. Purim is a Nes Nistar. And therefore, what the Gemara is saying over here and what Rav Nachman is saying over here is Kriyata Zuha Leila means that the Hallel of Purim is a unique type of Hallel. It's not the regular type of Hallel that you would say on an Nes Galui. It's the special Hallel of Purim. When it says Kriyata Zohei Leila, it's not saying that Kriya Tamigillah equals Hallel. It's saying that the Hallel of Purim is the Kriya Tamigillah. That's the proper Hallel to say it. And therefore, he disagrees fundamentally with this view of the Meiri that you could replace the Kriya Tamigillah with Hallel. So that's found in the Rav Hutner in his Pachad Yitzchak with regards to Purim. Rava Amar, Rava gives a third possibility as to why we don't say Hallel on Purim, is that Bishma Hatam, over there by Yitziat Mitzrayim, Hallelu Abdei Hashem, the paragraph that begins the Hallel is that we should sing praise or song to Hashem, because we're the Abdei Hashem. We're now Abdei Hashem, Velo Abdei Paro, and not any longer the servants of Paro. Hacha, over here by the case of Achashverosh, or the case of Purim, Hallelu Abdei Hashem, Lo Abdei Achashverosh. Over here, we're Obdei Hashem and not Obdei Achashverosh. Akati Abdei Achashverosh Anan. We were never released from the auspices of Achashverosh. We're still under the auspices. Never, you can't say Hallelu Abdei Hashem because we're not Obdei Hashem in contrast to being Avadim of Paro here in the case of Purim, because we are both Obdei Hashem and still Abdei Achashverosh. And therefore, we were never released to the point where you can say Hallel. Ole Rav Nachman, Damar Kriyata Zohei Leila, Hatanya. What does he do with the Braita that we saw before? Mishnechnas Ularetz, Lok Shiru Kol Aretzot Lomar Shira. That you can't say Shira outside of Eretz Yisrael. So how are you saying it outside of Eretz Yisrael with regards to Purim? Kevin Shigalu, Chazru Le'Teren Arishon. He believes that, yeah, that was true when they entered into the land of Israel. That made the land of Israel a unique place where Nisim were subject to Hallel. But that was also then retracted or rescinded once they went into Galut and went back to the former state, like the case of Yitziat Mitzrayim, where the Nes in Chutz Laaretz was Ra'oi for Shira. So too, the Nes of Purim, which is in Chutz Laaretz, post the Galut, the destruction of the Beit Rishon, so that also then created a situation in which in Chutz Laaretz you could say Hallel. And again, the Hallel of Purim is the Kriyat Megillah, whether you take that literally like the Meiri, or like the Pachad Yitzchak, that's the unique Hallel that's associated with Purim. Right now, the Gemara says, "V'loya makeh ba'avuv shel nechoshet." They didn't use a flute that was made out of copper. Patach v'chalil u'mesayim ba'avuv. The Mishnah begins speaking about a flute, a chalil, then ends off speaking about avuv. So Amar Papa, as I noted in the Mishnah, this is what the Gemara is going to say: "Hainu chalil, hainu avuv." That they are synonymous; they're interchangeable. The words. A chalil and abuv are both a flute. V'amai kari le'chalil. So then why do they call it a chalil if it's really an abuv? And the truth would be the same the other way around. Why do you call it an abuv if it is a chalil? So the Gemara explains over here, the chali kale, that has a very sweet sound to it. And so that's why it's called a chalil, because of this sweet sound. The other side, the abuv, is called because abuv is hollow, and therefore it's a hollow instrument. Tanu banan. Abuv haya b'mikdash, chalak haya. The abuv in the mikdash was very smooth. Dak haya, it was very thin. Shelkaneh haya, it was made out of a reed. Umimot Moshe haya, and it was there from the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. Tziva melech, so the king came around. Vitzipeu zav, they wanted to upgrade or make it a fancier instrument. So they plated the flute with gold on top of it in order to create such an upgrade. Velo haya kolo arev, but it lost that sweetness to its sound. Nadlu et sipuyav, they took off that plating. Vaya kolo arev kamot shehaya. Then once they took off the plating, it went back to having a beautiful sound like it was beforehand. So here, kolomosif goreya, making it or upgrading it to an instrument that had gold on it, ruined the sound, and therefore they peeled the gold off and returned it to its former state. Tziltzul haya b'mikdash. There were, Rashi says over here, cymbals. There were cymbals in the mikdash. Shenechoshet haya. They were made out of copper. Vaya kolo arev. And again, the sound was very sweet and nice. Vinifgam. And something happened that caused damage to the cymbals. From the continuation of the story, it sounds like it didn't change the sound of the cymbals. Now, just appearance-wise, there was something wrong. There was a problem with the instrument. Shechol Chachamim, the Chachamim called Veviu Umanim Alexandria Shel Mitzrayim. They sent down for the craftsmen of Alexandria of Mitzrayim, which we know was a very large city, a huge trading city, a large Jewish city. And the Gemara describes in Megillah that the shul there, people used to sit according to their profession, one of the largest shuls around that had a tremendous population. So we know that Alexandria of Mitzrayim was both a very wealthy Jewish community. They donate many things to the Mikdash, and they're also called upon for their expertise in terms of fixing things or doing things in the Mikdash. So here they called on those craftsmen to come to fix these symbols, Vitiknoa, and they fixed it. And once again, its sound was not pure or soft or sweet. Now, Luat Tikuno, when they took off the fix that the craftsman had done, Vayakol Arev, Kamot Shehaya, went back to having its sweet sound that it had before. So that's why I was saying that the Pgam over here doesn't seem to be impeding the sound. It's just simply an appearance issue, and they went to fix it, but when that fix caused the sound to change, and that was problematic, so therefore they removed the fix. Machteshet Aita B'Mikdash, there was, whether it's a mill or a mortar, that was made out of copper. It was, again, from the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. Now, the word mifatemet, or pitum, generally means to mix the spices together. Over here, it takes on an additional meaning of mifatemet ebsamim, based on what we're going to see further in the Gemara, that it actually gave flavor or improved the bisamim, the smell, or the aroma that emanated from the bisamim, nitpagma. Again, there was some damage to the mortar. Once again, they brought up craftsmen from Alexandria, and they fixed it. And it didn't work like it used to work. Whether that means it didn't work like it used to make or mix the spices properly, or like Rashi says, and the Gemara is going to say in a second, it didn't then give the additional flavor into the spices anymore. Therefore, they removed the fix, and then it went back to doing what it did before, whether that means mixing it well or creating these sweeter and better smelling spices. Elu shnei kelim nishtaru mimikdash rishon benit pagmu. These are two utensils or kelim that were left over from mikdash rishon, and they got damaged. Layelam aruka, and there was no way to fix them because when we went to fix them, they no longer functioned like they did originally. And as Rashi notes over here, the Kli Mikdash Rishon were covered by the statement of Akol Bichtav Miyad Hashem Alai Hiskil, that all the Malacha of the Mikdash was done by the word of Hashem and by the direction of Hashem, and therefore the Kelim that come from Bait Rishon have that unique godly aspect to them, and therefore when they were fixed or touched by the human hands, they did not improve or did not allow them to continue to work like they did before, and that's why the fixes over here were no good and they couldn't be mlo male aruka. There was no way to rectify the problem that had arisen. Baleim Amar David, and on them, David HaMelech says, Nechoshet Mimurat and Nechoshet Murak. What they're doing over here is one pasuk from Divrei Yamim, and one pasuk from Melachim Aleph. In Melachim Aleph, Perek Zayin, pasuk Memhei, it says, Ve'eta Sirot, Ve'eta Yaim, Ve'eta Mizrakot, Ve'et Kol HaKedim Ha'ele, Ashasach Hiram, LeMelech Shlomo, the Hiram made for Shlomo, Beit Hashem, for the Mikdash, Nechoshet Memurat. That's the pasuk that's found in Melachim Aleph. You go to Divrei Yamim, Bet, Perek, Dalet, Pasuk, Tet Zayin. It has a very similar pasuk and says, Veta Sirot, Veta Yaim, Veta Mizlagot, Vet Kol Kleim, Asach Huram, Aviv, the Melech Shlomo. Huram Aviv is the son of Hiram. And so Huram did this for Melech Shlomo Beit Hashem. So that's a discrepancy in the pasuk as to who made them, and they were Nechoshet Maruk. So that pasuk, instead of saying Memurat, it says Maruk. So there you have one pasuk saying Memurat and one saying Maruk, and they're both descriptions of the type of copper that was used over here. And as Rashi explains, that Memurak means Kalal, it was light, or shiny. It's not clear here what Rashi's referencing to. And Memurak means Dak, that it was thin. And Rabbeinu Gershom says that Memurat means Mavrik, it was shiny. And Memurak means it was chalak, it was smooth. And then some say, talks about the purity of the copper over here, that Murak means the cleaned of impurities, like Shutaf Murak, Bamayim, that's used to be cleansing out a kli that had Kodashim in it, that's mentioned in the Torah. Murak would either be cleaned of all impurities, or Murak might be smooth, like the Rabbeinu Gershom says. Now what's interesting about that is that it says, Valayim Amar David, that's what David said about them, but we don't have any quote over here from David HaMelech, because the stories in both Lechem Aleph and Divrei Yamim are a reference to the time of Shlomo HaMelech, and the kelim that were made by Hiram or Huram for the Beit Hashem. Therefore, if you look in Od Yudalud in the Shita Mekubetzet, he changes the girsa from Alehem Amar David to Alehem Amar HaKatuv. And you can see a similar sentiment in the Balei HaTosafot as well, which would make more sense, because it has nothing to do with David HaMelech, it's the Psukim say about them. And then in addition, it says, Valeem Omer. In addition, it says in Ezra Chet about the Kelim that they make and they bring to the Bayit Sheni, it says about these copper utensils, V'chapurei Zahav Esrim La'adar Chonim Aleph, Uklei Nechoshet Mutzav Tova Shnaim Chamudot Kizahav. You have these copper utensils that were plated seemingly in gold, good gold. Shaim, there were two of them, chamudot kezav. They were as desirous as gold. There's something unique about the copper that made it just like gold. But there's also the word shnaim. As Rashi notes over here, the shnaim is a reference to these two copper kelim that came from the Bayit Rishon and were still in use in Bayit Sheni, which is the machteshet, the mortar, the copper mortar, and the tzilzul, the cymbals that were used as the musical instruments from Bayit Rishon. So the Gemara brings on that pasuk from Ezra that also talks about the Shnayim, that Rav Shmuel, there's a machloket as to how to explain that pasuk. Chadamar kol echad v'echad shakul kishnayim shel zahav. The Shnayim is a reference to the copper, that each one of these items was like two times the amount of gold. Chadamar shnayim shkulim kechad shel zahav. That the two of them together were equal to one that would have made out of gold. Tani Rav Yosef in a Braita says about that pasuk, Shneihem Shkulim Kechad Shel Zahav. Both of them were equal in their total weight to like one of made out of gold. Tanya Rabbi Natan Omer, Shneim Hayu. Don't read the word Shnaim, but rather Shneim. Shneimar Shnaim. Al Tikrei Shnaim Ela Shneim. That they were doubles. In that there were two of each of these kelim, it wasn't just a single kli. Not shnayim as a reference to both the cymbals and the mortar, but rad shneim, that they had replacements, and that each one of them, both the cymbal and the machteshet, had a duplicate that was also used. There were two of each one of them in the mikdash. Tani Rav Shimon Gamliel, Dimei Shiloach Hayem Mekaleach Mayim B'Kisar. Rashi says over here, the source of the water flow of the Shiloach came out of a small hole that was the size of an isar. Tziva Melech v'rchivua. The king said, well, if it's coming out of such a small hole, and that's the amount of water flow that we're going to get, if we expand that hole, then we're going to get more water flow. Kadeshit Rabu Meimav. So that then we have more mortar in the Shiloh. Vinit Mahatu. And just the opposite happened. When they expanded the hole where the Mayan was coming from, they actually got less water than they had before. Bechazru Miatul. So therefore they replaced it, they re-cemented it up and made it into a small hole again. Vaya Mikaleach Maim. And then it started to flow with water. The Kayim Mishan Amar. In order to uphold that which is said in the Pasuk in Yirmiyahu, Alitalel Chacham Bechachmato. A wise person should not take praise or bask in the glory of his wisdom. Vayitalel Gibor Begvuato. And the same is true for the one who is the strong one. He should not feel praised for his strength because that's a gift of God. And similarly, Alitalel Ashir Ba'ashro. The one who is wealthy should not take bask in the glory of his wealth. And so, as Rashi notes over here, the idea that there are certain things that are created by Hashem, and therefore human input on them only serves to degrade them or to ruin them, and that's what it means that a person should be haskel v'yadoti k'ani Hashem, that you have to focus on Hashem. And so that's why the clay Mikdash that came from Mikdash Rishon that were done v'yichtab miyad Hashem, that were done by the Tzivui Hashem, and they had an aspect of Ruach HaKodesh and Nevuah associated with them, they were able to do this wonderful work and create these wonderful melodies, but as soon as there was human input into them, it was actually to their detriment, similar to the Mayan of water that was flowing over here, that the human involvement was actually detrimental to the situation. And that was to remind people that sometimes humans think they are smarter, quote-unquote, than God. They're better than God. These were an indication that God's work is greater, and that sometimes the human has to step aside or step back and see the greatness in the work of Hashem and not try to interfere or think that they can do better or make it better. Their hardolim were not found in the Mikdash. My hardolim. What is this instrument that you're speaking about? Amar Abaye Tavla Gurgadna. As Rashi goes over here, says it is a bell with its clapper inside. And the reason that we don't include it is Mikshe Shikolo Arev, because it has a nice sound, which means very strange. You can see over here that the notes indicate not that it was Kolo Arev, but Kolo Av. It has a very thick sound, a very overbearing sound, and therefore it would be Ma'arbev et Ni'imah. It would ruin the rest of either the sounds of the other instruments, or it would ruin the tune, or that which the Levim were trying to sing, and therefore it was counterproductive, and that's why we don't have, according to Rashi, a bell, and according to others, it means some sort of percussion instrument that had an overwhelming sound that did not play well with the other instruments that we had in the Mikdash. In Tosfos, where he brings, they are v'minei kli zemer, they are a type of instrument. And he actually says that the Aramaic translation of Ugav that is found in Tehillim is Hardevalim, and Ugav, which is translated as a pipe or some sort of instrument that uses air, and maybe even something akin to an accordion that uses pressure of air to go through piping that causes the sound. There was this quote-unquote shovel in the Mikdash. Magrifa, we know from the Gemara and Yoma and other places that it was a shovel that was used to move the ashes and the evarim that were on the Mizbeach. But obviously this Magrifa that was being made here is an instrument and not a shovel. You can see that in Tosfos where he says, Elanir the Faresh, the Shnei Minei Magrifot Oyu, Echat B'dashen, like Rashi describes over here, Echat Shoshir, and one that was a musical instrument. The association between them might be either it was shaped similarly or it was also an instrument, but most likely it's the same term that's used to describe two different things, and maybe it has some association with the shaping or looks like a shovel of sort. Asara nikavim ayuba. There were 10 holes in it. Kol echad v'echad motzi asara minei zemer. Each one of them could then produce 10 different sounds. Nimtzei kulam motziam mea minei zemer. Therefore, it can produce 100 different sounds. The way that Rashi explains it over here is that there are 10 holes in the main piping, and then each one of those has a piping that comes out of it that has 10 holes in it. And that's why you get this multiplier of 10 times 10, because you have 10 different pipes with 10 holes in them that are coming out of a main pipe that has 10 holes in it. In the bracket we have, hey, ama, it was an ama, v'gvo ama, it was also an ama tall, Vekata yotzei hemena, and it has a handle that comes out of it. Vasara nikavim ayubah, there were 10 holes in it. Kol echad motzi mea minei zemer, and each one of them produced 100 sounds. Nibzeit kulam motziah elef minei zemer. And therefore, based on that multiplier, you have 1,000 different sounds that can be produced by this instrument. So from the description of the Braita, it sounds like we're dealing with possibly a square box that has pipes that are coming out of it. Though the Rabbeinu Gershom says that the kata, that handle that's mentioned here, that's the item that has all the holes in it, and that's why it creates the sound.
The way to remember that which is said in the Mishnah versus that which is said from a memra of Shmuel is to say matnita guzma, that the Mishnah, the Tanaic works, many times exaggerate. And we have examples of that throughout Shas, including the fact that it took 300 Kohanim to put the parochet into the mikveh because it weighed so much. Again, these numbers of 300, 400 are derech guzma. We do find them in the Mishnah.
Rabbeinu Gershom says it's really speaking about a braita, and we generally have that the outside Tanaic works are usually mutate, that they have mistakes in them, and that would be the similar sentiment as to what we're saying about the Tanaic work over here.
That's why we say the one that says there's 1,000 sounds, which seems to be an exaggeration, we're going to associate the origins of that with the Tanaic work, versus the one that says it was 100 sounds, we're going to associate with the memra of Shmuel, and that's just a way to remember that which is being said over here.
Or maybe more literally, it is a guzma, 1,000 sounds is just a little too much, but it's just indicating that it has more sounds than the memra that we saw before that said 100 sounds. Here it says that it has 1,000, but 1,000 may not be an exact number.
Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots on the top of Yud Aleph, Amud Aleph.